Which is the first page?
The first page is the page that says a three on the top, and it says the new who is a Jew, robots, and minyanim.
Okay.
So this is going to be hopefully the culmination and the last time that we gather to talk about this specific topic. Just to kind of set the stage, we've been talking about artificial intelligence and halakha. We talked about the Russian, the psak machine, the idea of whether you could have a machine that makes a psak. We talked, what else did we talk about? We talked about issues that self-driving cars have to deal with. We talked about whether or not, how the halakha fits in to specific situations that a computer might have to make a decision about. We talked about liability last time, namely, you know, if things go wrong, if a robot goes a little crazy and robs a bank, or if a car causes damage or something like that, based on the artificial intelligence, who's liable? Is it the programmer? Is it the owner? Is it the company that owned that sold it? All those kinds of issues. This time, we're going to go really to the heart of it and take it all the way and talk about, you know, I guess what most would consider science fiction, but who knows? And the question of whether or not, let's say, a real artificial intelligence, you know, a super artificial intelligence, one that's basically indistinguishable from a human, whether or not it could be considered a human, and if it's considered a human, if it can be considered a Jew, Jewish. All right? So I put the first thing over here is Eugene Goosman. Anybody know who Eugene Goosman is?
No, because if he needs to carry on, if he's included the minion, does it mean that he has to be around 13 years to be able to
do it? It's a valid question, but let's wait till we get to that specific question.
You have to have a bris,
because if he doesn't have bris, then...
Why not?
Why does he have to have a bris? I don't follow.
You're not included in the if you know you don't have a bris.
Lapiton.
What? If you can't have a bris...
What do you mean? Of course that's not true. Anybody, this is like basic. What do you mean? A person could still be a Jew, and if a person is born to a Jewish mother and he doesn't have a bris milah, he can still be part of a minyan. Of course he can. There's nothing wrong with that. If he doesn't have anything to... women don't have... Well, they're not part of a minyan. But the person that doesn't have a bris milah...
You just answered the question, was this robot born to a Jewish woman?
Hold on. First, let's talk about Eugene Goosman. Okay, so who is Eugene Goosman? Anybody hear of Eugene Goosman? No. Very good. So, several years ago, this is in 2014, you guys know what a Turing test is? So, Alan Turing is basically the superhero grandfather of all computers. You know, he built the first modern computers. He's responsible for the whole Enigma machine, for cracking the Enigma machine that the Germans came up with during World War II. And basically, he came up with the idea that if a computer, if a machine could convince humans that it was human itself, so that would be a real artificial intelligence, and that's called the Turing test. So every year, they have Turing competitions, where basically people put forth chatbots, which is basically a computer, you know, that will talk, and human beings sit in front of a computer and chat with somebody on the other end, not knowing if the person on the other end is a human being or is a computer. Artificial intelligence chatbot. They don't know.
So the voice is lifelike, actually.
It's not a voice. It's text.
Okay.
It's text. So you basically chat. You ask all kinds of questions. You have a conversation. And at the end, you write down, do you think this was a human or do you think this was a computer? Obviously, some percentage are humans and some percentage are computers. And basically, nobody ever came close to fooling a significant amount of judges. So as it says over here in the Wikipedia entry, in 2014, in the third paragraph over there, 33% of the event's judges thought that Goosman was human. The event's organizer, Kevin Warwick, considered it to have passed Turing's test as a result. Per Turing's prediction in his 1950 paper, Computing Machinery and Intelligence, that by the year 2000, machines would be capable of fooling 30% of human judges after 5 minutes of questioning. All right? So you may quibble with the criteria over here, you know, 30%, 5 minutes of questioning. All right. But that's what Turing came up with. That's what he predicted. And they considered that this was basically that he had passed. This bot had passed. Now, there is somewhat of a caveat with regards to Eugene Goosman. What's the caveat? So it's in the first paragraph. Basically, part of the reason why this worked was because Eugene presented himself as a 13-year-old Ukrainian boy who is not native English speaker and is a little bit off. Okay? And so the conversation, you can read the transcript of it online if you want. The conversation is a little bit, you know, kvetchy in terms of whether or not you really believe that this chatbot has successfully passed himself off as a fully functioning human, because he's a 13-year-old Ukrainian boy speaking in a foreign language. But, okay, Seder. Point being that this is the idea, that if you can fool people into thinking that you're a human being, then you have successfully become a human being. There's certainly something to say for this with regards to Yahadut. When Kadosh Baruch Hu creates man, so what sets him apart from the animals? So the Torah says, "Vayipach ba'apav nishmat chayim, vayihi lenefesh chaya." What's interesting here is that "vayihi lenefesh chaya" is actually not exclusive to humans. Nefesh chaya is terminology that refers to all the animals that are created. Nevertheless, the Unculus, probably his most famous comment in the entire Chumash, is right over there. When it says Nefesh Chaya, he says Ruach Memalala. Now, what is Ruach Memalala in Aramaic? So Ruach, we can understand. Memalala is to speak. Lemalel, from the word Mila. Right? Lemalel. Exactly. So Ruach Memalala means a speaking spirit, which means, according to Unculus, the difference between man and the rest of animals is the fact that he can speak. It's going to be very important. Okay, but let's move on to a more familiar source. So this is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Rava says, if the righteous wish to do so, they can create a world, as it is stated, but your iniquities have separated between you and God. In other words, there is no distinction between God and a righteous person who has no sins, and just as God created the world, so can the righteous. Apparently, we can create worlds. Indeed, based on this, apparently, Rava created a man. Rava bara gavra, using forces of sanctity, meaning, say, for Yetzira or some kind of Kabbalistic forces. Rava sent his creation before Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira would speak to him, but he would not reply. So this golem couldn't speak. Rabbi Zeira said to him, "You were created by one of the members of the group, one of the sages. Return to your dust." And he basically, poof, he disintegrated him. Disintegrated the golem. All right? But a gavra, as the Gemara says, a gavra is a person. So what are we to make of this Gemara?
If
he would have been able to talk, then Rabbi Zeira wouldn't have done anything to him.
Then what?
Then, I don't know, then what? Then Rabbi Zeira wouldn't have done anything?
Rabbi Zeira's objection was only that he couldn't talk, correct?
I mean, that's what the Gemara says.
That's what, it seems to be like that's the reason why he got rid of him.
Well, he spoke to him and he didn't answer.
Right.
So what good are you? If you're a creation and you can't talk?
Well, historically speaking...
If you're an artificial creation.
Historically speaking, I'm not exactly sure. I meant to look up in the context over here, but historically speaking, golems in Jewish tradition are usually created in order to protect Jews from those who would want to harm them. Uh-huh. And so the golem plays some kind of, you know, superhero role. That's, you know, in the story of the Maharal, which is not a true story, almost definitely. That's what he created him for. What? Yeah, Rabbi Lyman has a fantastic shiur on Wayu Torah. I recommend it. About the story of the Golem of Prague, basically debunking it very convincingly.
It's not too scary.
Very, very convincingly. I recommend everybody listening to it, but be that as it may, the Gemara certainly has a story about Rava doing it. Now, what does it mean to create a human being? So can we compare creating a human being to creating a robot with intelligence?
Can I ask you a question before that, if you don't mind? If Rava has the ability to create a golem, why didn't he also have the ability to create a golem who could speak?
I don't know.
Or did he have that ability and choose not to employ it?
I obviously don't know.
I'm just raising the question.
It's a good point.
It makes a difference.
It definitely does make a point. It definitely does make a point. And the question becomes for us, what happens if he would have? What happens if he would have created one with the speech? Now, I put on here for fun Isaac Asimov's three laws of robotics. If anybody plans on making a golem, they should make sure to program into the golem the following three things. Number one, and most important, a robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. All right, this is very important for Skynet. Terminator, the whole movie doesn't work if they would have only done this. A robot must obey orders given it to by human beings except where such orders would conflict with the first law. Again, protecting the first law. A robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. Again, if we only would keep to these three laws, almost none of the dystopian futures predicted by science fiction movies would ever come to pass. Okay, fine. Now, here comes the fun part. Rabbi Moshe Goldfeder. Now, I don't personally know Moshe Goldfeder, but I know his brother, Corey, or Chanoch, who was actually my age and was in YU with me.
Is he from Chicago?
I don't know. But Chanoch, it happens to be, and I'm saying this on tape, probably one of the smartest human beings that I've ever met in my life. He works for Google now. I think he works on Waze at the moment. I looked it up recently. We were computer science majors together. He was a Rav Shachtushir. Brilliant guy. I can only assume that his brother is also very smart and has the same kind of tech-savvy inclinations. Because several years ago, in 2014, again, he gave an interview to JTA and it was also reprinted on CNN as an opinion article. And it was basically an interview. And the following thing happened during this interview. What are the basic criteria that would make a robot monkey mermaid Jewish? Well, we start with the Talmud in Sanhedrin, which tells us the story of Rava sending a golem to Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira ends up figuring out that the golem is not human. It couldn't communicate effectively and couldn't pass the Turing test, apparently, and so he destroys it. The halakhic literature asks why this was not considered Baal Tashchis, since maybe the golem could have counted in a minion. We'll get there. While they conclude that this golem at least was not able to be counted, they leave open the possibility of a better golem counting. It seems that that creation by a Jewish person would give the golem presumptive Jewish status. For living things, there is always parentage and conversion. What's he saying? He's saying, yeah, if he would have spoken, if it would have been a better golem, maybe it would have worked. Question, theoretically speaking, say a robot walked into your office and said, Rabbi, I want to count in the minion. Would that be enough evidence for you to count him? I mean, I don't know what, I mean, you have to look into his lineage, right? So, not necessarily, for the purposes of this discussion, I would accept the position of the Jerusalem Talmud in the third chapter of Tractate Nida that when you are, this is an interview on CNN, that you are dealing with a creature that does not conform to the simple definition of humanness, born from a human mother, or at least possessing human DNA, but it appears to have human characteristics and is doing human things, one examines the context to determine if it is human. When something looks human and acts human to the point that I think it might be human, then halacha might consider the threshold to have been crossed. This makes sense from a Jewish ethical perspective as well. Oftentimes, Jewish ethics are about the actor, not the one being acted upon. If I see something that, for all intents and purposes, looks human, I cannot start poking it to see if it bleeds. I have a responsibility to treat all that seems human as humans, and it is better to err on the side of caution from an ethical perspective. Now, it's interesting where he's coming from here. This is basically, he's quoting a Ramban.
It's like Rosha said on, about meat.
It's a little bit different, but I hear you. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck. Well, here I believe he's invoking the Ramban on Shiloh HaKen. The Ramban and the Rambam have an argument about Shiloh HaKen, which is nuanced. It's not easy to detect exactly what they're arguing, except that the Ramban says he's arguing. The Rambam says the purpose of Shiloh HaKen is God wanted to be merciful to the bird, right? So we send away the mother bird. We don't do it in front of the mother bird because Hashem doesn't want the mother bird to feel pain. Ramban says, birds don't feel pain, at least not in the sense that human beings do, and Hashem is not interested in the pain of birds or not. Why does Hashem want us to send away the birds? Because He wants us to be merciful. In other words, the purpose of the mitzvah is not for the bird, it's for human beings. So it would appear to me that Rabbi Goldfeder is invoking this and saying, forget about the robot status itself, I should treat it as human because that will improve our ethical standing, even if it's not really. Now, there's definitely some perverseness to this if it's taken to the, all the way to the nth degree. But I understand what he's saying. I think the difference between science fiction and science is often time. If you were to ask me now, I don't think Jewish institutions need to start worrying about it quite yet. Even with the Turing test officially passed, we're quite far from the situation of having a robot capable of walking among us unsuspected. But I do think that Jewish thinkers should start tossing around the question because we're probably 30, not 100 years away. Okay, and there's a nice little cartoon. This is 2014. Nice little cartoon over here. If these robots may not be traditional Jews, but at least we'll always have a minion. Right? Kind of funny. Now, what do you think of this? What do you think of this interview that he gave? Well, you guys don't have really there's a little bit more source material that we need in order to understand where he's coming from.
It's an interesting opinion about the second question. It's about us as people, even if it's a robot, we should be treating it in a correct way, not for the robot, but for ourselves, and it's something to do with humans correctly. I don't understand the first one so much, though.
You said, well, whether it's human, but not whether it's Jewish.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you go from Jewish, from human to Jewish is a good question. It's a very, very good question. Maybe you can convert it. Maybe you could convert the robot if it wants to become
you
Jewish.
You give it a bris? I mean, what do you mean you convert?
No, because you can't give it a bris. So you don't give it a bris. You don't give it a bris. If it'll survive the mikvah, sure. Why not? What's lacking? What's lacking? What's why can't you do this? Okay, so David says what's missing is the neshama. All right. What Yoel says is missing is bechira chafshis. Bechira chafshis is a sine qua non of being human or being Jewish.
I mean, it's a human.
Human. Okay. It's lacking the human. Neshama is about being Jewish or about being human, David.
Well, Jewish in theory.
Only about being Jewish. Okay. Fine.
But I mean, because that's what. Because the research that.
We're going back to what we were talking about last time on the time of forwards, which was about the if the robot can quantitatively make a decision.
Right.
So if it can't, then.
So we're assuming that it can, right? Well, okay, so we'll get back to that.
Yeah, in theory, in the future, the robot can be programmed with feelings and
thoughts. Programmed, yeah.
Huh?
Well, we're programmed.
That's on like a
method,
isn't like the only point of theory.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So
yes. But we still have a point.
Right. So we have to figure. You know, we have to figure out whether or not that's good. That's a good question. That's the question.
Do people theorize that a robot can get there?
There's two sides. Ever since I've been giving these shiurim, so my phone has been giving me like tons of articles about artificial intelligence, because that's the way that these things work, and the majority of them have actually been pretty skeptical about the future, saying that all the claims about artificial intelligence are way overblown and nothing, we're not even close to anything. But I don't know. Elon Musk is very scared.
Hundreds of years, I mean, it's plausible.
No, it sure is plausible. And, you know, I don't know why these people, they're so skeptical. It seems to me like there's a lot, it's just a hop, step, and a jump. But okay.
Well, this guy thinks it's 30 years away.
So this Moshe Goldfeder, so he, so he got kind of ripped apart a little bit on the internet after this article came out, you know, about by rabbis and whatever who didn't like what he had to say. They thought it was ridiculous. So he actually responded. So he writes as follows: "I'm writing to clarify a position of mine that was unfortunately misrepresented in this magazine. I recently gave an interview with the JTA in which I discussed the idea of robots and halacha. The entire interview had a disclaimer which appeared in print that is not to be taken lemaisa and was only a theoretical conversation. In the interview, I referenced a famous Gemara in Sanhedrin where the Talmud discussed the idea of a golem, a humanoid automaton, interacting with human beings, while Rashi writes that the golem here was made by Sefer Yetzirah, which usually refers to a mystical text. Medieval Kabbalists such as Moshe Gordovero explained that the Sefer Yetzirah referred here was actually a book of natural science, that the golem was not spiritual, just a form made out of dust, and by natural means it was made to appear like a man. This gives us our clear analog to the idea of a robot. In other words, if you're going to say that Rava created a gavra out of magic, right, halachic, Torah magic, but magic, so then there's much more reason for us to say, okay, maybe it has a soul too, maybe it has bechira chavshis, who knows, all bets are off. But if you say that what he did was, as Rav Moshe Kudavera says, is, you know, I don't know, he had access to some kind of science that we're unaware of, so then that's it could be that he made a robot, who knows, we don't know. Interesting. Now, here's where it starts to become more grounded. Halachists throughout the centuries have been fascinated with this story. Famously, the Chacham Tzvi and his grandson Rav Yaakov then both address the possibility of this golem counting in a minyan. We're going to look at this inside. They conclude that the golem could not, as it lacked any intelligence whatsoever. He's no more than an animal in a human shape. We're going to see that inside. They did, however, leave open the possibility of a different golem actually passing the threshold. Interestingly, the Midrash actually tells us that Yirmiyahu HaNavi actually did it. He created a full human being, and he only destroyed it out of fear that people would begin to treat it like a god. The reason I'm writing, though, is not to argue about whether or not these agadas are true or worth thinking about. People are free to agree or disagree that they are interesting. My point is that it is irresponsible and potentially harmful when a writer takes a quote from a place like this out of context and neglects to include the original disclaimer. I wish to make 3 points. Obviously, I'm not of the opinion that a robot can actually count in a minyan, as I reiterated to the Ami author over the phone before the article was even written. I reiterate again that the entire discussion about robots in minyan was only theoretical, as stated in the original interview. Even regarding the rhetorical straw man that the author builds to tear down, unfortunately, he got it wrong. After I had mentioned the discussion in the postgame about golems in a minyan, the JTA interviewer asked me if, theoretically speaking, a human-like robot would count. My response was not necessarily even in the theoretical plane. I made a related ethical point, Okay, so that's how he ends. Now I want to actually look at this tshuva. Okay, so this is a tshuva that we've actually quoted before. It's quoted anytime these kinds of conversations come up, as well as anytime conversations about cloning or what we talked about earlier in the year about cultured meat. Okay, this is the Chacham Tzvi. This is the famous Chacham Tzvi.
When did he live?
Rav Tzvi Ashkenazi lived in the 17th century. I think so, 17th, 18th century. He was Rav Yaakov Emden's father.
In Spain or in France?
Ironically.
Grandfather.
Grandfather? His grandfather?
Grandfather.
Someone check that up? I thought it was his father, but okay. His name, interestingly, he's a Chacham Tzvi, which means that he lived in Sephardi lands, right? Because he's called Chacham. On the other hand, his last name is Ashkenazi. Because he actually was Ashkenazi. He was Ashkenazi. He kind of got like...
No, his last name is Ashkenazi?
Yeah. And well, Ashkenazi, I don't know if his last name, but...
And Ashkenazi would not be called Ashkenazi.
You're right. Only a Sephardi except would have a except last name he Ashkenazi. Was, he might have started that, right? In other words, you're right. Anytime you see somebody with the last name Ashkenazi now, you know he's not Ashkenazi.
That's right.
I went, you know, going to Yeshiva Flatbush, I know this. But on the other hand, he was Ashkenazi. He just happened to end up somehow the rabbi of a Sephardi congregation.
Wikipedia says he's
the
son.
Yeah, right? The Rav Yaakov Emden, his son, right? Or the other way around.
You read before as a grandson.
Is this okay. Is there the other end? Am I getting confused? Rav Yaakov Emden is the son of the Chacham Tzvi, or is
so his father was the Chacham Tzvi.
Yeah, good. There we go. I knew. You sure he said grandfather?
His grandson.
You're right. Okay, so that was a mistake. Okay, fine. All right.
That's wrong. Everything.
Yeah. Right. Nistapakti, Adama Notzar al Yedei Sefer Yetzira. Here we go. Sefer Yetzira is one of the oldest, if not the oldest, verified Kabbalistic work. It talks about how God created the world using the letters of the alphabet. So this is another rabbi who supposedly made a kolam. So can he be part of a minyan? Do we say because it's nikdash b'toch bnei Israel and he's not bnei Israel, so therefore he can't?
What does that mean?
Well, we know that this is the source for making a minyan is nikdash b'toch bnei Israel, so maybe he's not part of bnei Israel. Oh, dilma kevin the kaimel b'sanhedrin hamigadel yatom b'toch beito. So this is the amazing line. So the Chacham Tzvi wants to, basically he says the other side of the equation is, maybe the way that the robot, or the golem rather, in this case, the golem becomes Jewish, is merely because he was created by a Jew. Created and developed by a Jew. And just like the Gemara says that, thank you, that if a person adopts and raises a child, it's as if they are their child. So too, this golem is, so to speak, adopted and raised by the Jewish creator. So, Alright? So do we say that because the golem was created by a Jew, therefore it's Jewish? Or do we say, no, it's not Jewish, so it can't become part of a minyan? We saw that Reb Zera, when he ran into the golem, so he basically, poofed it into dust. Go! He basically killed it. If this golem really was a human being, then he never would have killed it, basically. There wouldn't be shvichud damim because it's at least not an adam. He's really walking the line over here. It's kind of confusing. It almost sounds like he wants to say that he can be kind of a minion even if he's not human. But okay. Dafka adam anotzar toch adam. Dahinu ubar anotzar b'mei ha'imo. Who the chayav alei mishum shvichud damim? Yatsa hau gavra debar rava shelo nasa me'isha. Or maybe he's saying that shvichud damim, the din of shvichud damim, the din of murder only applies to something that was born to a woman. So maybe this robot is not something that was born to a woman, but nevertheless,
which
is human enough.
Which corresponds to the definition of a Jew, born to a Jewish woman.
Fair enough. But here he's replacing that definition, or at least he's supplementing the definition, by saying if it was created by a Jew, then it can become Jewish. Then it can be Jewish, even if it wasn't born to a Jewish woman.
It is Jewish at the moment of creation.
It would seem, maybe. Jewish. Yeah, yeah. Mikol makom, kevin sheyesh bo toel, lo hayel lo havi yomin ha'olam. Shein mitzar. He says, nevertheless, even if it's not murder, he shouldn't have got rid of it. He could have used it for a minion. Now, you could say that. They had no need for a minion, or maybe. I don't know. Anyways, mi ben chacham tzvi b'shem aviv. So here, this is actually from a son of the chacham tzvi. I don't know if this is Rav Yaakov Emdin or not. B'sefer divrei Rav Meshulam sheila yud hevi me aviv, a chacham tzvi, lama shenichtav b'sefer. Let me just find. He quotes the Maharam Cordovo. This is of Moshe Cordovero that I quoted before, where it says, "Hina briayi shehi b'tzurat adam v'lo shi'e b'neshama v'lo nefesh v'lo ruach elachiyut ba'alma." Says basically that this briah, it's not that it had a neshama or a nefesh; rather, it just had life, and that's enough. In this case, it couldn't talk, because the story says it couldn't talk. But it had life, it was alive. You know, just like mute people can be alive. So it was alive. Now he says, V'nistayas ra'ati siyua sheyesh bo mamash, kevan she'ein bo afilu nefesh adam, ein lo esek v'inyanim adverim ha'teunim ha'sara u'shlosh ha'nefashot mi'yisrael, v'gri tova mi'nefashot nefshei Yisrael, she'en ha'mistar v'lishum davar. Of course, they're much worse than women. Okay. Basically, he concludes that they cannot be considered for a minyan. That's the conclusion of the Chacham Tzvi. Chacham Tzvi's conclusion that it couldn't be used for a minyan, basically because Rabbi Zera wouldn't have killed him otherwise. Okay. Now take a look at Rav Tzadok. This is Rav Tzadok we look at.
Do we extend from that that they are not human? Mm-hmm. Or just that they are not Jewish?
It seems like he's saying, well, he says they're not either.
He seems to conclude that they're not either.
Okay. Because if they were, then they would have used it for the minion.
Okay.
Now, skip for a second, skip the Rav Tzadok for a second, and go jump down to the Mishnah Berurah, just so you see why this is often quoted. It's literally in the Mishnah Berurah. Okay? When the Chafetz Chaim wrote his Mishnah Berurah, he put this in. It's talking there about who can count for a minyan, and it's talking about whether minors can count for a minyan. So he says over here, Ayin Pri Chadosh. What?
On the third page.
It's a page where in the middle it says Mishnah Berurah.
Bottom.
In the middle. Says Mishnah Berurah Gedolim Ayin Pri Chadash Shekara Er Al Hamakomot Shenogim Shekatan Omer Kaddish Ubarchu. So there are places where apparently a katan would say Kaddish and Barchu. V'akal Oni Macharav. What? Well, I think you mean alone. I assume he means alone. The Shalok Edin Emosim V'Afilim Yesh Asara Hashem Gedolim Chutz Mimenu V'Ayin Beprim Megadim Sham Shemetzadek Shemetzadek Gam Ken Lahachmir Bezal Lachatchila Katav Be'Alakachtov. Fine. Skip to the underlying part. Mishnah Berurah. Adam anotzar al yidei sefer yetzira. Im mitzaref liyud l'chol davar shebikdusha. Ayin b'shurus. Excuse me. Chacham tzvi. U'b'sefer kridinim. Mashikata b'inyan. He doesn't tell you what he says. He doesn't want to tell you what he says. But we saw that he basically concluded that they could not. Yes, David.
A question to ask you, what happens if a katan reads the Machtir or the Haftorah, and at the end he's going to say the brachot, is he allowed to?
Yeah, sure.
Katan.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't say the brachot for the for Birchat HaTorah, for Maftir, someone else says that. But Maftir itself he can read. No, the katan does not say the brachot for Birchat HaTorah.
Again, same issue with the...
Well, that could be because they consider them already gadol. That's very possible.
That's why it's not, as far as I understand from a wise family, a bar mitzvah really isn't such a big thing because they really do everything by
usual.
Right.
Do you understand? Where does the story of the golem come from? I'm not really.
Which one?
The whole concept. I mean, I've seen this. It's in the Gemara.
The Gemara.
What's the basis of the concept around it? I don't get it. The fact that the rabbis believed that they could create something else.
This is not the first thing where time, or the only place where we see them create things, right? We when we were discussing the meat, mm-hmm. right? So there's several stories of them creating animals or pieces of meat,
really?
Right? So this is just among that. It's one of those stories. There are many golem stories.
What's the idea behind it?
You said generally the golem was created as a sort of superhero to save the Jewish people during...
Generally speaking, over history, over the course of history, that's usually how those stories are go. What?
Yeah, what's the motivation for...
Usually the motivation to create a golem through, you know, for the last several hundred years was to protect the Jews from marauding non-Jews. But I don't know what Rav's motivation was. I remember there's a parallel, like, funny other you know how the Chacham Tzvi said, you know, why did he kill the golem? He should have just used it for a minion. So there's a Gemara in Brachos that tells a story of I forget which Tana, who they only had 9 people for a minion and he had a slave, and so he releases the slave so that it can become Jewish, and then they'll have 10 for a minion. And the Gemara has a whole discussion. It's usher to release a slave, a Canaanite slave, a non-Jewish slave. It's usher to release a slave. So how could he do that? And the Gemara concludes it's a mitzvah gedola, for a mitzvah derabim rather. Mitzvah derabim, you're allowed to do something that could be, that's usher midoraisa, even an isser. So some ask, well, why didn't he just make a golem? Right? So that's like the inverse question over there. So the fact that he didn't create the golem means...
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the kind of way that kind of terminology might go. Okay. Just jump back up Rav Tzadok for a second. So this is Rav Tzadok Kokomi Lublin, 19th, late 18th century Hasidic master. So this is from Parshas Bo. It's my Bar Mitzvah Parsha. So he says, Chalam li al masha, I had a dream. Al masha amr b'sanhedrin amr lo tuv v'afrach, about the whole story with Rabbi Zeira and the Rava. T'diktek mizeh b'tshuvas chacham tzvi she'en bo to'el esetzar for devashu kedusha. So I want to talk about this. It says Ein Muchrach the Yeshlomer Shaya Yare Shelo Yenase Mazik the Briot Kshi Gadel Ktzad Vaza Filo Haseu Yakashelo Gamken Lachziro LaAfro Kiu Chalazik Gamlo. Says no. The real reason, maybe the reason why Rabbi Zera destroyed the golem is because it was dangerous, because Rava forgot to apply the 3 rules of Isai Asimov, and maybe as the golem increases in intelligence, eventually it's going to turn into Skynet and take over the world, and nobody will be able to do anything. You guys know what Skynet is, yes? Yeah. So, Terminator, Skynet is the company that eventually, you know, basically the Terminators.
So something, it's Google.
All right. So he says, so Rav Tzadok says, maybe it was able to join the minion, but that's the real reason why it did it. Ukomosha siper b'sheles yayvet, me'oto anotso ideza keno, Rav Eliyahu Baal Shem, that he did it, and that's what happened. The golem became dangerous. Valkane, that's what he's basically implying, that this apparently happened, that a golem was created and it became dangerous, and then it had to be put down.
Monsters.
Had to be put down. Yeah, that's where Frankenstein, that's where Mary Shelley got the idea from.
Yeah, got it.
Is it for a fact? You know that for a fact?
I read that somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it must be true. Valkane, Ein lahashod beria kazeh ela livra'o, litzorech hadavar shetzarech lo. Or maybe it was created for a specific purpose, and then once the purpose was fulfilled, then it went back into the dust. And so maybe it wasn't even a...
Which means Rav Zera didn't do it? He fulfilled his purpose and just disintegrated?
That could be. Or Rav Zera did whatever he was supposed to do with it. And then put it down, because that's what it was created for, and to leave it out would be dangerous. Nearly the chiddush aniskar tuva. All right, let's see what he has to say about something about this. What? Yeah. It's after the Chacham Tzvi. I'm now in the bottom paragraph over there. Nearly pashut adin Rav Tzadok Kokomi Lublin wants to say that the golem can be used for a davar shebekdusha. Says it's at least as good as somebody who's a cheresh sheinu medaber. Meaning, even if it can't speak, still good. Ein murkhuk de khayr shtab bay das hu kemo katn de adam notz ob lo dat rak shgadol balo adat ze eno shomea veno medaber im hu betol do de fishe ein lomer das mit de adam im nit khayr achar kach hu de fishe no le bukhasan be mach ein vodat aval ze here we go the underlying part ze shno tsay be komato ka adam gadol this golem reed robot was created already conscious and with all of its faculties even if he can't speak. It's not because he's got anything wrong or that he's lacking dat. It's just that he doesn't have the facility to speak. Nobody installed that module yet. Or he doesn't have a speaker. Who knows? Right? That's the only reason.
The Cheresh, who doesn't hear or speak, is not eligible for minyan anyway, correct?
In the time of the Gemara, for sure not. Nowadays, it's somewhat of a debate. V'av shekaza b'chesed l'Avram, the ein lo neshama v'ruach memala. Ah, but wait a second. Chesed l'Avram, another Hasidic work, I believe, says that if it doesn't have a soul, right, if it can't speak, rak ruach habahamit v'alkein mutar l'hargo k'beima. So that's why they were allowed to kill it, because it was like an animal. V'cheinu b'marsha. The Marsha itself, Marsha on the Gemara, Yeshlom to become a kom eino kebehema bedumut Adam sharei who notes of a sefer yitzira, aderech yitzira ta Adam v'lo aderech yitzira ta behema. El de nishmat chaim devayi papach bapav shehu shehi haruach hamemala al yidei shehu chelik elorak mimal ze ein yicholim latet bo. Because they could not give this golem a neshama, because that only God can give, it's at least as good as a non-Jew. So that's why, David, maybe this is what you meant. The gam ken ein lo chelok alak mimal. It's a big debate over there, whether or not... What? That's Kuzari, yes. Mimal ve'ava bi she'achol v'daber ha'inu b'lishono ve'in zekari dibor. That's not called dibor. So he wants to say that it's human, but it can't be Jewish. Marsha. Fine, let's jump past that. So basically, the Rav Tzadok is going to say from the perspective of whether or not it's human enough to be part of a minion, whether it's intelligent enough, yeah, why not? Why not? Sure, I think it can.
So if he's no worse than the guy, are you going to say he's chayev and he shav mitzvot ben Noach?
Interesting. Maybe. But what does Rav Tzadok end up saying? In the end, Rav Tzadok ends up saying, he says, but wait a second, he pulls back. Lav bar chiyuv mitzvosu. He doesn't have mitzvos. V'imkein, afilu tomar dekarina bebnei Yisrael, mita'amo dechacham tzvi sham, dehumasi yadav. Even if you want to give him the chalos shame of Yisrael just because he was created by a Jew, like the chacham tzvi wanted to suggest, nir dein lahat elav chiyuv mitzvos. He doesn't have mitzvos, mita'am zeh. Lomar dekol mashgaz batorah, davar, dabel bnei Yisrael, yeh gam hu bichlal, kevin dein bo nishmas chayim, he doesn't have a soul, so how can he have mitzvos? V'asha'as nefesh la'olam haba, sechar ba'onesh, v'imkein, ein l'tzarfo, therefore, since he can't have chiyuvim, can't add him to a minion. So at the end of the day, he pulls back and says he can't be a part of a minion. But then he ends with something really weird. I don't know. I don't know why he has to say this. He says at the end that nevertheless, for some reason, for Birkat HaMazon, he can become one of the 10. For saying Elokeinu, Dasha Gamkin, Yodeh Alamim Mevarchin, V'tzarech Bir, V'ein Kan Mekomo. Because maybe it doesn't require the mitzvah.
He says he just doesn't think it's necessary like any part of the Kotah.
Right, so what does he gain by mentioning the Kotah part?
Because he doesn't throw out the Chacham Svara that if you create it, the Jew created it, it will be Jewish. He just doesn't think that he would be a Rachman.
He needs that he would be Jewish.
Jewish, but
he needs that he would be intelligent.
Intelligent,
right?
Is not necessarily.
But he also, and apparently, he also needs, what's it called? He also needs that what we're trying to do doesn't require that somebody is chayav. So that's why he brings up the katan, because what he's basically saying is that if a katan can be considered part of the 10 required to say Elokeinu, then that means, it's news to me, but that means, it doesn't mean that he can, for a Zimun, but for Elokeinu, then that means that the requirement to be part of Elokeinu is not chiyuv, because a katan is not chayav in Birkat HaMazon. He doesn't have a chiyuv. So if that's the case, then maybe the robot or the golem could, as long as he fulfills the other criteria, i.e. that he be Jewish and a bar dat. So that's why he thinks that it would work.
There's something that's bothering me about this entire discussion.
Really? Yeah, what's that?
What would that be?
We're equating golem with robot.
And which which direction?
Unless I have a totally different concept of robot from what everyone else has, a robot is something that a person creates out of mechanical devices and computerized devices and gears and everything else. And a golem is something that's created maybe from Sefer Yetzirah, whatever you want to call it, and he is humanistic.
So, two things. Number one, number one, Rav Moshe Cordovero helped us a little bit with that, at least the way that Rabbi Goldfeder quoted. I'm not sure if it's accurate, but he basically said that no, Rava did it somehow naturalistically. But let's throw that out. Let's say forget that. Let's say we leave that alone. Let's not be concerned with how it's made, but rather with the final product. The final product, what we're imagining here is not, you know, a robot like, from
any movie.
What?
Any movie.
Well, yes, no, the hefech. I'm imagining a robot from a future movie, from futuristic movies. I'm not talking about robots that exist now that go on Jimmy Fallon and they're capable of jumping or following, you know, direct commands to a certain degree. What? Terminator doesn't seem to have...
Yeah, he's very...
Well, I don't know. It depends which movie, I think.
Yeah, even from the first one.
Maybe. Thinking more Short Circuit. Okay? Short Circuit is all the way. One of my favorite things ever, my brother used to go around the house. You guys all saw Short Circuit or no?
He mimicked his Indian...
You should go home and see Short Circuit. You should go home... Yeah, Johnny Five Alive.
The
entire premise of the movie is trying to figure out whether or not this robot is alive. Now, we've discussed a few different things about what living means. We've talked about speaking. We've talked about decision-making. We've talked about Bechira Chofshit. In the movie, do you know what gave it away? Do you know what the final determining factor? What's his name? What's the actor's name? Steve Guttenberg? No, that's not his name, is it?
Could be.
Like, you know what he decided? The creator, basically, the one who made all of these robots. So at the end, his Turing test, so to speak, was he spent a night telling the robot jokes. And if he could get it, then he said that he was human. So at the end, he told him the following joke. This is the joke. The last joke he told him was, said there was a Christian, an imam, and a Jew, and a rabbi walking on the road, and they came across a bag of money. And they decided to split it three ways. Not misspent. They came across a bag of money, and they said they were going to split it three ways. So the priest took the money, and he drew a circle in the sand and said, I'm going to throw the money up, and whatever God wants will fall outside the circle, and whatever falls inside the circle I keep, and whatever falls outside the circle I give to charity. The imam takes his bag, makes a circle, and says, I'm going to throw the bag of money up in the air, and whatever God wants will fall into the middle of the circle, and everything that falls outside the circle I'm going to keep. The rabbi takes the bag, he makes a circle on the ground, and he says, I'm going to throw the bag of money up in the air, and whatever God wants, he keeps. So Steve Guttenberg tells this joke, and silence. And then this is like his last joke. He's like, I have no more jokes. So he's like, he's standing there, and he's frankly disappointed. After 10 seconds, the robot doesn't say anything. And then all of a sudden, you hear Johnny Five goes... Oh, I get it. Whatever he wants, he keeps. And he starts laughing and laughing and laughing. And my brother, for like a day afterwards, all he could do was walk around the house screaming, whatever he wants, he keeps. And he just was screaming it. I'll never forget it. But what was the idea? The idea was that jokes. But what was the idea? Jokes are absurd, right? The point of joke is the logical fallacy. They don't make sense. That's the point. There's almost a saying that the difference between a robot and a human would be that the human understands absurdity. He understands when things don't make sense, which a robot presumably wouldn't be able to understand. That's the idea behind that line in the movie. Now, how did we get here? Okay. So what are we talking about that? We're not talking about a robot that just carries out, you know, a set of pekudot. It's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a robot that you teach it. Imagine the following, okay? Nowadays, what they're doing at Google is they're saying, okay, listen, we have this problem. We don't know how to solve it. This is what I want you to do. We want you to solve this problem. And that's a hard thing to tell a computer to do. So the computer goes out and tries to solve the problem. So if, I think we had an example where they wanted to create a really good fan, I think it was. I don't remember exactly what it was. A really efficient antenna. They wanted to create a really efficient antenna, and all the human engineers tried to come up with the antenna, and it was never good enough. Then they told the computer, okay, now we want you to create the antenna. The computer used what's called genetic algorithms, which is a really complicated form of artificial intelligence, or whatever you want to call it, machine learning, deep learning. And it basically created this really odd-looking antenna, which worked better than any antenna ever created. Okay? Now, let's say you told the computer, I want you to go be human.
I want you to...
Go be human.
Be human.
Now what happens? Presumably, the computer teaches itself how humans act, what humans do, and then it goes and does that. Now, at what point is that any different than what we do? That's the question, right?
We're still living in the Matrix, man.
Well, we're still humans if we're living in the Matrix. Unless you talked about Smith, Agent Smith. Agent Smith is
the bad guy.
You would say that, okay, you have to be born and you have to...
Right, so good. So we could go with technical, which intuitively appeals to us. No. And Rav Schechter, by the way, as we've said before, goes this way and says, no. A Jew is a human being born to a woman. By the way, what does that rule out? We're going to get...
Artificial. I mean, like, testy babies.
Yeah, we'll get to that soon. You know what? We'll get to it now. All right, we'll get to the media, multimedia part, okay? You ready for this? This is Rav Adin Steinsaltz.
Where is this?
It's not on the sheet. Rav Adin Steinsaltz, I think it's from 2007. I don't exactly know.
About the same thing. But the main decision is...
He's talking about cloning and artificial intelligence.
Are not considered to be humans. They are like us. They may have some kind of a rudimentary speech, but they don't belong to humanity, and therefore they have to be dealt with and treated with as animals. Now, that is at least some kind of a decision that says that humanity is defined in a certain way. Defined in a certain way, even though the form is not always the one, the part that always that counts about it. In other parts, and as I say, about artificial, completely intelligent beings that were not created in the usual way. Now, let me put at least an argument. An argument on one side, saying again that this argument is not binding on anybody, but at least is for something that is just at the stages of beginning thinking, it is one of the ideas. See, the question of the problem of the soul, as I mentioned, is crucial here. Does a creature created in the laboratory have a soul? Does a creature created in a test tube have a soul? Now, If I would put it in a very general, say, theological consideration, I would say that on the basic thinking, I don't see that whatever procedure comes about attaching a soul to a human fetus at every stage, that it is connected with a specific place in which it is done. So, if we say that, can we human beings make decisions about creating a human being in a test tube, then I would say that most of us, those who have children.
Here he goes on and talks more about test tubes. What?
It's very.
Here he starts talking about test tubes, and he basically wants to argue that.
Is he talking about a test tube fertilization?
Yes.
Which is then later in.
No.
He started to diverge into.
Which implies that they're similar.
Yeah.
Basically saying, what are you going to say? You're going to say they don't have a soul? He says, I don't know where the soul comes from. And, you know, if we were to go extreme science fiction, one might make the argument. Is it impossible to make the argument that, let's go in stages. What's he arguing? He's saying, what are you going to say about a human being, indistinguishable from other human beings, because it's literally biologically a human being, created in a laboratory, from sperm from a man, and an artificial womb, not even a woman's womb, just artificial, completely artificial. Forget if it wasn't even sperm from a man. Let's leave that aside for a second. And then it grows up, and it looks just like you and me. It acts just like you and me, because of course it does. Does it have a soul? What's the answer? Someone might say, no, it doesn't have a soul because it didn't get created through the natural means of production.
Who says that's the only way that's going to give a soul?
I don't know who says that.
Yeah, that also means this creature cannot be converted to become Jewish. So
Schechter says, at least now, he says, it's not human, and with everything that entails, it's not human. With everything that it entails. I heard him say it. I don't know if he's going to pull back when it becomes realistic, but I heard him say that.
Test your baby, isn't it?
But what if you completely test your baby that they haven't made?
Artificial woman.
They haven't made.
They've cloned a sheep, I think.
Right? Yeah.
Dolly. Yeah. But, so now, if that's okay, so then the next step becomes, all right, let's say we make an artificial intelligence, which is indistinguishable from a human intelligence. And when I say indistinguishable for now, all I mean is in its effect, meaning it appears to be indistinguishable.
You can be machalic to some, if it might to something which actually is indistinguishable, even under microscope.
Let's say it is indistinguishable under microscope. Let's say it's indistinguishable. Let's go all the way.
Thank
God we live now, because this is complicated stuff.
Right. Now, but even if it is indistinguishable, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not, that it's the same, right? It may not. It may not. And the question is, at what point does it matter? Like, we're all humans, and I don't want to speak from a religious perspective, but from a scientific perspective, we have a computer in our heads that tells us what to do all the time. It's a very complicated computer. It's affected by our hormones, by our upbringing, by our environment, by everything. But, you know, our decision-making process from a strictly secular perspective is very deterministic, right? We believe that there's something extra going on. And then, as you're always pointing out, maybe the computer won't have that something extra. Maybe it will. We don't know. There's no way to know.
Yeah, it could acquire it.
Yeah, it may be that it's something that you can't acquire. And from the science fiction perspective, I've seen it said that a soul is not something you're given, it's something you develop.
Well, if it's the kuzari, then it would be something that is. Because you can convert and...
Right. Good point. Maybe God bestows the soul once the person decides to convert, and then that's it. So why can't a robot make that same decision? Theoretically. No, obviously, none of this is relevant right now.
There's moral issues that we're going to face as a society. I mean, we talk about it.
The world can't sustain the humans. We're going to stop creating fake humans.
I want to just end with just a few more thoughts. We're not going to read inside. I have the Rambam over here where he talks about, what it means to have free will. That free will is basically the basis of Judaism, because without free will, there's no schar va'onesh.
Yeah.
And yet acknowledging that we don't really totally understand free will and how it works. Now, the Rambam is talking about it actually from the perspective of us with God and how free will can coexist with God's knowledge of the future, which is one of the things that bothered the Rambam. The other thing that bothers the Rambam is also the idea that we're born a certain way and that we are fated to live a certain way because of our genes, which is something that's actually fascinating the world right now with a bunch of different documentaries about, you know, you saw that documentary maybe with the triplets and it was a really great documentary about these triplets that were separated at birth and then they kind of rediscovered each other in life, and half the documentary is showing how similar they are and half the documentary is showing how different they are. And you know, it's trying to handle the question of how much of us is nature and how much is nurture and how much is ourselves. All kinds of issues like that. Well, this movie examines.
It's a case of twins like that.
Yeah, twins.
There are. Well, they're...
When they were split at birth during World War II and then at the age of 70... Adopted by different people.
This movie examines a bunch of those cases.
And they met up at some point. And,
yeah, apparently there was a company.
They're identical, and they're identical twins, and they've got the same mannerisms. And
right.
They've got the same...
Right, so there was an adoption agency that was doing this. There was an adoption agency that was doing this on behalf of scientists, because they wanted to investigate it. They wanted to evaluate the results afterwards.
Surprise.
What? Eugenics. Yeah. Eugenics, yeah. Now, what I wanted to point out about that, though, was that the Ravid comments on the Rambam. He has a big problem with the Rambam bringing up an issue and not really closing it. But what's interesting is how the Ravid deals with the problem of how God knows things. And his answer is basically that God, this is a separate discussion which we've had before, but in a nutshell, the Ravid says that maybe the way that God knows the future is because God knows all of the state of everything going on in the present. And based on that, he can extrapolate the future, which... It sounds a lot like a computer, but also it brings up the question of how free will works then. And he basically says, you can see it, but he basically says that that God also knows that there are some circumstances where a person is not going to be held restricted by circumstances. That there is always, it's kind of like that sort of thing, is always going to be areas where things can be different. That was one point that I wanted to make, and how that affects a computer, and whether or not your computer has the capability of going down two different diverse paths based on its decision. Yeah, based on the decision that it makes. How we make decisions, how computers make decisions.
The car and whatever what you're discussing.
The car is more rudimentary than what we're talking about, I think, because car doesn't make decisions based. It doesn't make its own decisions.
But it's going back to where your case of.
Trolley, right?
And...
Right, but that the computer makes that decision because we told it what to do and to begin with.
Can you get to the bottom line? If someone is created, if someone presents me here with a golem, and I have nine people for hire, and a golem walks in, can I count them for a minion?
No, you can't count them for a minion.
No, you are beyond the golem.
Yeah, but even right, yeah.
The golem doesn't speak. If you had a golem that speaks,
and expresses. True decision making, and it said that it wanted to be Jewish, and it was made by a Jew. Also, interesting nafkamina. That it might depend if it was made by a Jew or not.
Well, no. If it was made by a Jew, it doesn't need conversion. Then, if it wasn't made by a Jew,
it could convert.
Then, maybe
theoretically,
it needs to be a bar also in order to convert.
Yeah. All right. For now, this is all a very fun conversation. I do want to end with one last thing, and this is a little bit of selfishness. It's one of my favorite stories by Ray Bradbury. Is one of my favorite authors. I think I've quoted it before at the beginning.
Fahrenheit
451. But this is from a story called "I Sing the Body Electric," which is a gorgeous story. You can find it online. You can read the whole thing from beginning to end. It's basically about a family where the mother dies. And the family's grieving, and they don't know what they're going to do. And they see an advertisement in a magazine that says you can get a grandmother from this company called Marionettes Incorporated. Marionettes is puppets. And basically, they get delivered to their house this robotic grandmother. It looks like a regular grandmother, but it's a robot. And at first, they're all appalled by the whole idea. But it kind of wins them over with how charming she is, and she's brilliant, obviously. And she doesn't get tired, and she doesn't get annoyed. And she knows them all, and she seems to have compassion. And over the course of the story, like they come around to her, and then at the end, she's having a conversation with the father, and the father's just utterly confused by like what has happened here. And she says the following. She says, most machines are amoral, neither bad nor good. But by the way you built and shaped them, you in turn shape men, women, and children to be bad or good. A car, for instance. Dead, brute, unthinking, and unprogrammed bulk is the greatest destroyer of souls in history. It makes boy men greedy for power, destruction, and more destruction. It was never intended to do that, but that's how it turned out. She's basically describing the way people could feel about machines. Machines are capable of tremendous destruction, except most, it was never intended to do that, but that's how it turned out. Did I copy the same paragraph twice? Okay, I'm sorry I did that. It makes boy men greedy for power, destruction, and more destruction. It was never intended to do that, but that's how it turned out. Being mechanical, I cannot sin, cannot be bribed, cannot be greedy or jealous or mean or small. I don't relish power for power's sake. Speed doesn't pull me to madness. Sex does not run me rampant through the world. I have time and more than time to collect the information I need around and about an ideal to keep it clean and whole and intact. Name the value you wish. Tell me the ideal you want, and I can see and collect and remember the good that will benefit you all. Tell me how you would like to be kind, loving, considerate, well-balanced, humane, and let me run ahead on the path to explore those ways to be just that. In the darkness ahead, turn me as a lamp in all directions. I can guide your feet. The point of the story over there is not so much that the grandmother ended up being human. That wasn't the point. She doesn't really end up being human. What she ends up being is a guide and a tool towards becoming a better person, which is an amazing thing because the way that human beings have used technology throughout history has been for convenience. It's hard to wash your clothes in the river, so build a washing machine. It's hard to count things, so build a calculator. It's hard to get from point A to point B, so build a car. But the question in all of these things has never been, it's hard to be a better person, so let's build a machine for that. Nobody has ever actually gotten up and said, it's hard to become a better human being, so let's build machines to make ourselves better. It's always been, let's build machines to make life easier. And so he said this man, he made a company and he made machines that helped families run better. Not by making things easier. And that's, you know, the grandmother does that. She you know, she cooks and she cleans and everything. But she does so much more than that. She actually teaches them to become better. She treats them with compassion. She shows them compassion. She shows them attention. She does all these things. Nobody's created that machine yet, as far as I know. It's time. But it's just an amazing idea that may be more interesting than what the robot can become. It's what the robot can do for us. And nobody's thinking about that, but just it's a startup. All right. Shkach. Very nice.